It sounds like we've averted disaster, but I don't think they're quite safely in port yet.
An Alaskan fuel barge traveling in Canada is back under tow after breaking free in rough seas. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, November 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the residents of Newtok watch the river inch closer to their village, threatening a way of life.
We grew up here. We fish here, we hunt here. Our community doesn't want to separate.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming.
An apparent close call involving an Alaska-bound fuel barge in Canadian waters has renewed concern about petroleum shipments through the Inside Passage. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Provincial authorities in British Columbia reported a barge laden with at least 1 million gallons of diesel and gasoline detached Sunday from its tug in stormy seas. Canadian Navy Lieutenant Melissa Kai of the Joint Rescue Coordination Center in Victoria said by the next morning, a second tug had regained control of the 430-foot barge.
The line is holding and the tug is underway. So at this point, they've managed to lift her anchor and have her secured, which is great news.
Officials did not report any damage or spill from the vessel, identified as the Zedell Marine 277. It wasn't immediately clear Monday afternoon which Alaska port it was bound for or where it's being towed. Messages with the company weren't immediately returned, and rescue officials wouldn't say.
That's for the company and for Transport Canada to decide based on weather conditions. And obviously, the ultimate goal is to bring her into port at the safest possible location.
But the apparent close call is little more than a year after a similar mishap involving a fuel barge servicing Alaska ports.
The Inner Passage has some spots which are very tricky. They've got currents of up to 12 to 14 knots.
Dolores Broughton is editor of the Watershed Sentinel, a Vancouver Island-based environmental magazine.
In the last 3 years, we've had two close calls. One was actually a fuel spill, but it was an empty vessel, so the impact, although it was bad locally, it wasn't as bad as it could be. And this most recent one, it sounds like we've averted disaster, but I don't think they're quite safely in port yet.
The earlier incident was the Nathan E. Stewart, which ran aground 13 months ago while towing a mostly empty fuel barge from Ketchikan. It spilled at least 26,000 gallons of diesel near Bella Bella, a community of about 1,600. Marilyn Slett, chief counselor of the local Heltsik First Nation tribe, says the community's fishing grounds were impacted.
To this day, we still have clam beaches that are closed. And, you know, that has affected, you know, the local economy for clam harvesting. And, you know, we're still carrying out our own environmental testing. And, you know, it's such a concern for us.
Slett says at the very least, her community should be equipped with its own spill response gear.
Because right now, there is no official role for us, but we are, you know, the first responders. We are the first people out there when incidents occur. So, you know, and we live here. It's our backyard.
The Canadian portion of the Inside Passage is a voluntary exclusion area for larger oil tankers. But the route is popular with smaller U.S. and Canadian-flagged fuel barges that are routinely granted an exemption from having a Canadian pilot on board to guide them. There's legislation pending in Ottawa that could toughen shipping restrictions in the area, but under the current draft, fuel barges, such as those that serve Alaska ports, would remain exempt. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The village of Newtok has become a global symbol of climate change as thawing permafrost and erosion eat away at the land. But that international exposure hasn't yet led to a solution, and the village now has only a few years left. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rachel Waldholz reports on what will be lost if Newtok disappears.
Nutak is a 45-minute flight from Bethel, over a landscape so flat and riddled with lakes and sloughs, it seems like more water than land. From above, the village looks unbelievably fragile. An airstrip, a water tank, and a cluster of houses clinging to the edge of a river. A tiny human toehold in a vast, flat landscape. And that toehold is shrinking. So fast, it even surprises the people who've been watching it for years.
Wow. It's actually closer than I thought.
Dalen Nayuluk works for the Nutak Village Council. We're standing by the pond the village uses for drinking water. The river, once at least half a mile off, is now only 25 feet away.
This is closer than the beginning of October. I didn't expect it to be this quick.
In fact, the erosion is right on schedule. About a decade ago, the Army Corps of Engineers estimated Nutak would be uninhabitable by 2021 at the latest. Residents now think the water could reach the school and airport runway within the next 2 years. When that happens, the village will likely have to be abandoned. Nutak is home to just about 400 people. There are no roads, just boardwalks. The only running water is at the school. You can walk from one end of town to the other in about 10 minutes. Dalen married into the village. He moved here from Chivak, a community of about 1,000 people.
I was so amazed by this place, you know, coming from my hometown to another village that's smaller.
He says even compared to other communities across the YK Delta, Nutak is more traditional. The Yupik language is stronger here. Traditional foods are more common. And that's how he wants to raise his two young daughters.
The traditional way of what a woman would do, cutting seals, cutting moose, preparing the fish. It's more of a cultural thing, you know, it's embedded in our blood.
He says this is a place where you don't have to choose between the modern and the traditional. Take Dalen himself. One moment, he's regretting he didn't take the day off work to go seal hunting. The next, we stop by the village store, where Jennifer Carl is behind the counter.
As soon as I got on to play, you got off.
They're talking about online video games, specifically Call of Duty Black Ops 3. Can you guys do online gaming from here?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have internet.
Nutak may not have running water, but you can still play a first-person shooter game with someone in Germany. A 5-minute walk from the store is the Nutak School, which runs a dual language program. This morning, the 3rd and 4th graders are reciting the Pledge of Allegiance in Yupik. Across the hall, Bosco Charles is teaching his 9th grade class to introduce themselves traditionally.
Christine.
Bosco grew up here. He just graduated recently. At 20, he isn't much older than the kids he's teaching. But he takes his job seriously. Partway through the morning, he halts the class and sits down at the front of the room. The kids stop fidgeting and lean in. He ends with this.
Don't be the generation that kills our culture.
Don't be the generation that kills our culture. It's a heavy thing to lay on the shoulders of 9th graders, but Bosco says it's something they have to hear.
So my generation, in some villages, don't even speak their language. That's one of the main reasons why I keep myself motivated to speak Yupik, you know, and to keep it in our village and to our people.
The price tag for this way of life is something like $130 million. That's how much the Army Corps estimates it would cost to relocate the entire village together to a new site they've picked out nearby. But so far, neither the state nor the federal government seems willing to pick up the tab. So when the river takes the first houses, the village could start to scatter, and Nutak's blend of the modern and traditional could erode away with the land. One of the first houses to go will be the one where Dalen lives. It's a 3-bedroom house owned by his mother-in-law. About 9 people live here. Tonight, Dalen's wife Katie is serving dinner, baked salmon and duck. The TV is on in the background, and their 2-year-old daughter is toddling around in her diaper.
You could eat. You could try that.
If you sit at the kitchen table and look out the window, all you see is water. But Katie says when she was little, the river was so far away you could barely see it. So what's it like sitting right here during a storm?
It's scary. Really scary.
I mean, you're looking at
huge swells during a storm. And when those swells hit the side of the land, you'll just see water shoot up.
Even up to this day, it surprises me there's big waves, even though I've seen it every day of my life. So every day, I'm scared. I need to move. I want to move.
Dalen says it's frustrating that the rest of the country hasn't decided this community is worth saving.
Kind of like asking, what would you do if your home was being taken away? I mean, where you grew up, everything cultural, traditional. We grew up here. We fish here, we hunt here. I mean, our community doesn't want to separate. We want to live together. So it's like asking, why destroy that?
And that's the $130 million question. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Nutak.
Arctic temperature data has nullified a perceived 14-year pause in global warming. Work by a University of Alaska Fairbanks researcher shows global warming did not slow between 1998 and 2012 as previously calculated. UAF atmospheric scientist Shaidan Zhang says the falsely indicated moderation in warming resulted from a lack of Arctic temperature data.
Our new global data much improved representation of Arctic surface air temperature.
UAF Zhang says he and colleagues in China used readings from remote sensing buoys deployed in the Arctic Ocean and worldwide NOAA sea surface temperature data and calculated a continued increase in warming. Zhang says average global air temperatures continued to rise at more than a tenth of a degree per decade during the suspect 14-year time span, a trend driven by a far greater rate of warming in the Arctic.
During this time period, the Arctic warming rate is about 6 times global average warming rate.
U.S. and Chinese government agencies, including the National Science Foundation, supported the research, which is published in the journal Nature Climate Change. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Alaskan takes second at a World Cup race and secures her spot at the Winter Olympics.
Pretty crazy that happened so fast right away in the first couple of races.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
It's official. Sadie Bjornsson is headed to her second Olympic Games. The Alaskan cross-country skier qualified over the weekend with a second-place finish at a World Cup sprint race in Finland. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell reports.
Winter is well and truly here. We're back in the north of Finland. Ruka hosting the first round of the cross-country World Cup.
Under the bright white lights, Sadie Bjornsson toes the line alongside five other women in the finals for the classic sprint in Ruka, Finland.
Here's the lineup for the women's final. Bjornsson, Nielsen, Harsham goes for Norway.
In her blue race suit speckled with stars, Bjornsson looks focused. The buzzer sounds and they're off. Snow flies through the air as the skiers sprint up hills and around tight corners.
Sadie Bjornsson on the fast left-hander, she was a one ski for about 8 meters, managed to restabilize and back in the race.
Bjornsson has her head down and leans forward on a massive hill near the end. She's on her toes climbing the hill alongside Swedish skier Stina Nielsen.
Tempo slowing.
Oh, Sadie Bjornsson, that is the effort of her life. It's so strong through her arms, she needs to keep that strength now in the double poling.
She double poles furiously down the final stretch and lunges across the finish line.
It's Nielsen who's going to get this one. Great finish from Sadie Bjornsson, but not quite enough to take the win.
Not quite enough for a win, but enough to get her on her first World Cup sprint podium and a spot on the Olympic team heading to Pyeongchang in February.
It's definitely pretty crazy that that happened so fast right away in the first couple of races.
Bjornsson says she's actually never made the finals in a World Cup sprint race, so this was a pretty big deal for her. She and her teammates celebrated her second place finish. Bjornsson says her wax technicians deserve a lot of credit for the race.
It was a tricky day. It was snowing, and sometimes it's hard to find the perfect wax, and they did an incredible job. So it was more of a celebration for everyone.
Another skier with a reason to celebrate is Sophie Caldwell. The Vermont-based skier placed eighth in the sprint. Any top eight finish in World Cup races featured at the Olympics are automatic qualifiers for the Games. There are seven Alaska Pacific University skiers racing the World Cup circuit in Europe right now. Bjornsson says they're prepping for the races this weekend in Lillehammer, Norway. Then she says she's not nervous for what's ahead.
Anything can happen any weekend, and now I just kind of know what the limit is up there in the sky, which is really cool.
The Classic Sprint Race is one of the events at the 2018 Winter Olympics, so Bjornsson knows she could be towing the line in those finals come February. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell. Governor Bill Walker has signed a crime bill that passed this month during a special legislative session. Lawmakers acted in response to a public outcry over crime and concerns that arose from a criminal justice overhaul approved last year. The bill changes presumptive sentencing ranges for Class C felonies. First offenses change from a probationary sentence to a jail term of up to 2 years. The law creates a new graduated sentencing structure for theft of property valued at less than $250. Violating conditions of release returns the offense to a misdemeanor and clarifies that a person may be arrested and held until bail is set on the new offense. Fairbanks police are investigating the stabbing death of a woman on the city's south side. Police just before noon today received a report of a fight and possible stabbing at the Alaska Motel. Fairbanks Fire Department paramedics transported 57-year-old Jeanette E. Miller to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, where she died. Police have not released circumstances of her death and asked anyone who might have seen something unusual around the motel during the lunch hour today to call authorities. A Wasilla man has been sentenced to more than 13 years in prison for sex trafficking, according to a release from Alaska's U.S. Attorney Brian Schroeder. In January of 2016, Alaska State Troopers searched the home and truck of 44-year-old Terry Lee Kean II. In their search, troopers identified several women that Kean recruited to work for him as prostitutes in Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna Valley. The release says Kean specifically recruited drug-addicted women, that in exchange for lodging, food, and drugs like heroin and methamphetamine, the victims worked as prostitutes for him, providing him with money and sexual favors. Terry Kean was sentenced to serve 13 years, 10 months in prison for two counts of sex trafficking through force, fraud, and coercion.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by...
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from GCI, with complete technology solutions for organizations that keep Alaska's communities and economy thriving. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Haines is a scenic town surrounded by the ocean and towering mountains. But there's one big eyesore that's taken over parts of the area, garbage. Like some other cities, illegal dumping is a problem the community can't seem to get a handle on. But there's hope that could soon change with a different system for waste disposal. KHNS's Abby Collins visited Haines' most notorious illegal dumping site and has this report, part of Coast Alaska's series Talking Trash.
About 25 miles out the Haines Highway, there's a pullout. From the road, a large sand pile obstructs trails leading to the Chilkat River. In the summer, they provide a short route down to the water. In the winter, a popular cross-country ski track. Over the years, the area has also become an informal and illegal dump.
So this is a chest freezer, it looks like.
Yep. Chest freezer, an old stereo.
Derek Poinsett is interim director of the Tokchinook Watershed Council. He also lives out the highway and drives by the 25-mile eyesore regularly. He says illegal dumping here has been an issue for as long as he can remember.
A printer, maybe?
It's a computer monitor. Yeah.
Mattress.
Yep, bunch of burned out mattresses.
The Watershed Council runs community cleanups, and Poinsett says this particular trash pile gets removed every couple years. Poinsett says it's not just an eyesore. Illegal dumping causes environmental concerns as well. So why would people bring garbage here instead of the sanctioned landfill? Poinsett points to money.
I think it's just expensive. Anything that has any weight to it is expensive to get rid of.
That has been a driving factor in the conversation a local working group started last year. The question before them, is there a better way for Haines to deal with solid waste? Right now, Haines has one option for garbage disposal, privately owned Community Waste Solutions. Many residents load their garbage into their car or truck, drive it to the landfill, and pay by weight. Mixed waste costs 27 cents per pound. There's one other option for some items, the nonprofit Haines Friends of Recycling. They'll also take things such as refrigerators and washing machines for a fee. For people who don't generate a lot of trash or get rid of waste by burning it or recycling, the garbage company's pay by the pound is a pretty cheap system. But that's not true for everyone.
It's expensive to get rid of your trash here.
Darcy Colbeck chairs Haines' Solid Waste Working Group. He says illegal dumping isn't the main motivation for the conversation they're having, but it's a symptom of the bigger problem.
I've been here 30 years and as a wilderness guide and a person that's out in the bushes quite a bit, and it's a big problem. There's lots of trash out in the, if you do the community cleanups in the spring and walk the ditches, there's garbage, all over the place. It's disgusting.
That's the weird thing, right? This has been a problem for a long time. It's common knowledge that there are trashed appliances sitting out at 25 Mile and garbage and pullouts along the highway. So why is it still happening?
Usually the things are deposited in the dead of night by people who don't leave their names behind.
Deborah Schnabel is Haines Borough Manager.
So it's impossible to identify who was the previous owner.
Schnabel grew up in Haines, and she does remember a time when this wasn't such a big issue. She points to what she sees as the turning point, when the borough ended mandatory trash pickup. Schnabel says reinstating mandatory pickup isn't necessarily the answer here, but she does think accountability should be introduced back into the system. She explains one possible approach.
You can have an account with the borough, but you can manage it yourself. You can choose to take it to the dump. You can choose to recycle 100% or 90%. You can, as long as we know what you're doing with your garbage, I'm not telling you what you have to do, but it has to be done in a safe manner.
Whether a new strategy for waste disposal is the light at the end of the trash-filled tunnel remains to be seen. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
A forum discussing the value of education in a democracy takes place at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus Tuesday evening. The panel features former Alaska Supreme Court justices, doctors, education and immigration experts, and others. Professor Sheila Selcraig teaches policymaking in the Public Administration Master's Program at UAA. She says education is a unifying force.
Who we are is reflected in what we understand as we grow up and see the world. And so as we create messages through education that are messages grounded around our history, which is really a wonderful history in many ways of a nation of people who came here and didn't do so well taking care of the people who were here. But for newcomers, it wasn't a place to come that people could change their lives and do great things. So education is a big piece of all that.
And why, following along that same line, why do you think people need to be reminded of the value of education? What's going on that they need to have this conversation now?
Well, there's a couple things that are really important right now. One of them is that every poll you look at, we're extraordinarily divided. And we have two different views of the country. We've got this 50-50 view, and one of it is that, you know, government is bad and we need to, you know, get rid of the guys in Washington, and we shouldn't have to pay, and, you know, every man for himself, because that's where we're going. And the other is a sense of commitment to community and pulling together. And in a sense, those things have always been part of our history. That is, and in that tension, in some ways, keeps us healthy. But I think what's happened is that I can remember when people disagreed with each other and learned from each other in the conversation. And we're now really creating this sense of demonizing both sides. So it is really important for us to find the things that matter to all of us. And education matters to all of us. It's our children. It supports our economy. It takes care of it trains our nurses. It trains our doctors. It trains our lawyers. It trains our people who build our roads. It's so important. And for a long time, we had more of a sense of unity around funding education. But what we're seeing is that divide really result in underfunding or reducing the funding for education across the country in a big way. And in the end, nationally, that doesn't position us well to compete in the world.
Sheila Selkrig teaches policy in the graduate program at UAA. The Value of Education in a Democratic Society public forum takes place at the UAA Consortium Library Tuesday evening from 6 to 9 p.m. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Rachel Waldholtz in Newtok, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Russell in Anchorage, and Abby Collins in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/starthere. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.